Are you ready to take your intermittent fasting lifestyle to the next level? There's nothing better than community to help with that. In the Delay, Don't Deny community, we all embrace the clean fast, and there's just the right support for you as you live your intermittent fasting lifestyle. You can connect directly with me in the Ask Jen group, and I'll answer all of your questions personally. If you're new to intermittent fasting or recommitting to the intermittent fasting lifestyle, join the 28-Day Fast Start group. After your fast start, join us for support in the first year group. Need tips for long-term maintenance? We have a place for that. There are many more useful spaces beyond these, and you can interact in as many as you like. Visit jenstevens.com/community to join us. An annual membership costs just over $1 a week when you do the math. If you aren't ready to fully commit for a year, join for a month, and you can cancel at any time. If you know you'll want to stay forever, we also have a lifetime membership option available. IF is free. You don't need to join our community to fast. But if you're looking for support from a community of like-minded intermittent fasters, we're here for you at jenstevens.com/community. That's jenstevens.com/community. Achieving my long-term goals is more about creating healthy habits and less about quick fixes. And that's why I love both intermittent fasting and daily harvest. Tim Spector, a gut health expert and founder of Zoe, and Dr. B, gastroenterologist and author of Fiberfueled, recommend that you aim for at least 30 unique plant foods per week. Daily Harvest helps make it easy. One of my favorite options is the sweet potato and wild rice hash harvest bowl. With Daily Harvest, I'm getting tons of plant-based options built on organic fruits and vegetables that are easy to prep and free of weird ingredients such as fillers, seed oils, and added sugars. Create healthy habits that last with Daily Harvest. For a limited time only, go to dailyharvest.com/ifstories to get $30 off your first box plus free shipping. That's dailyharvest.com/ifstories for $30 off your first box and free shipping. dailyharvest.com/ifstories. Welcome to Intermittent Fasting Stories. I'm your host, Jen Stevens, author of the New York Times bestseller, Fast, Feast, Repeat, as well as the book that started it all, Delay, Don't Deny. I lost over 80 pounds thanks to intermittent fasting after learning how to delay my eating rather than denying myself the delicious foods I want to eat. Now, who's ready to hear an inspirational intermittent fasting story? That's why we're here. So let's get excited to talk to today's guest. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 383 of Intermittent Fasting Stories. Today, I'm here with Gina Andersland. Gina lives in Andover, Minnesota, and she is a dentist and a mom of six. Welcome, Gina.
Hi, Jen. Thanks so much for having me.
It's so nice to talk to you. I don't know what keeps you busier, being a dentist or being a mom of six.
I know. It's equally busy.
That's like three full-time jobs.
It is.
Well, you know, I like to start by asking, what brought you to intermittent fasting and when was that?
Sure. I'll kind of do my little backstory because that's what I enjoy hearing most about other people. So I never really struggled with weight through childhood, through college. It really wasn't until I started having kids that I started gaining. So I had 4 children between 2007 and 2012. And I gained a significant amount of weight with my pregnancies, maybe 40, 50 pounds. I was able to lose some after each pregnancy, but then would start the next pregnancy, you know, a little bit higher.
A little higher. Yeah. Like the stair step. You go up a little bit, then down a little up, but always going upward.
So after my third, that's when I first kind of explored my first diet, I guess. I did Weight Watchers. I felt like I did a very good job, was very successful. Lost, I don't know, a good amount of weight. Felt good. I was a big rule follower. So if it went in my mouth, I logged it and it worked for me. Then I got pregnant again. So that was my fourth pregnancy. Did Weight Watchers again, but just not as motivated. Kind of knew the program lost its appeal. I did like workout, you know, plans. I joined a gym that was like a 6-day a week hardcore kickboxing. Did that for 5 months. I was so strong, but didn't lose like a single pound. You know, after that fourth pregnancy, I probably lost the same 10 to 20 pounds and then gained it. And
what range were you floating around in at that point?
I was probably in like the 180s.
Okay. And how tall are you?
5'3".
Okay. I know that's frustrating to feel like, you know, you're literally doing kickboxing 6 days a week, because they told us if you just eat less and move more, you will lose the weight. It's math, right? And literally, I can't imagine doing more than kickboxing 6 days a week.
It was hard. And I mean, again, I was so strong, but not a pound. Then, so 3.5 years, that probably went on for 3.5 years, joined a gym, Weight Watchers, all that. I got pregnant again. And that was the first time that I got up over 200 pounds. So that was hard. It was a number I never wanted to see. After I had her, I, again, lost a little, probably hung out in that 185 for a while. I did Whole30, tried Weight Watchers again, just tried to exercise on my own. And actually, so then I signed up for a half marathon. And I started training for that.
That because you wanted to lose weight? And
correct.
You thought,
I was like, I got to do something. So if I have like a race date and an end, then I have to train for it, right? You can't show up to a race unprepared. So that was the fall of 2018. So then that winter, I kind of ran inside, trained on the treadmill. February, March, we're in Minnesota, so it's hard to run outside.
Oh, yeah. There will be no running outside in Minnesota.
No. So then, but then by March, April, I was running outside again, 3 to 4 days a week, increasing my mileage, still not losing any weight. And then on April 15th of 2019, my cousin sent me a message and said, Gina, I found this book. You have to read it. I've been doing it and I feel amazing. That book was The Obesity Code and Delay, Don't Deny. So I asked her a million questions. She was so patient with me. I ordered the books. I read The Obesity Code first, and then I read Delay, Don't Deny. I probably finished them both within like 3 days.
Now that was a lot, because The Obesity Code is
yes, but
is
I
no joke.
Loved that science behind it. And I was like, yes, this is me. This is me. And I was like, where's the answer?
That is why I wrote Delay, Don't Deny, honestly, because The Obesity Code came out in March of 2016, and I had been fasting, and I had, you know, I lost 75 pounds by that point, but was starting to slowly regain. But I read The Obesity Code and I'm like, what's his plan? What's the plan?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. I was like, well, I need to know what to do. Don't leave me hanging. So finally figured out, okay, fasting. I probably fasted. So then I just jumped right in, right? I probably fasted dirty for a few days until I finished Delay, Don't Deny, and kind of figured out I can't add things to my coffee. I was not a black coffee drinker. So now I tell people, if I can drink black coffee, anybody can drink black coffee.
Now I have to ask you something, because this is something we hear from time to time, and I don't think it's true. People say, and you're a dentist, that's why I'm asking you. They say, well, I can't drink black coffee because I'm afraid it will stain my teeth, as if the milk and the creamer is keeping the coffee from staining their teeth.
No, I don't think milk and creamer helps with that at all.
I didn't think so either, but I was like, I got a dentist here. I'm going to ask her, because that's like, I've literally heard that before. I'm worried the black coffee will stain my teeth. I'm like, if you're already drinking coffee with anything in it.
Yeah, it's already going to stain your teeth.
Okay, well, good. Thank you for confirming that.
And that's why there's bleach. So then you just bleach your teeth.
There you go. That's why you go to your dentist. Gina will help you. Dr. Andersland has got you covered. So you figured out the black coffee. How long do you reckon it took you?
To do the black coffee?
Yeah.
Oh, like 3 days, because I was like, well, I can't do that. So then I just have to have it black. And it was fine. I'm shocked. Like, I'm still shocked about that, because never would I have ever thought I could drink black coffee.
So everybody listening, this is coming out February 1st. We'll have the new year people excited to start. You can do the black coffee.
You can do it.
Yeah.
If I can do it, seriously, anyone can do it.
It's true. Me too.
So then that's when I started. And I think I maybe did 16 to 18 hour fast for a couple weeks. And then I was 22-2. And that was my sweet spot until December of 2019. And I lost like 30 pounds. So that was 8 months.
That's pretty good. And you were feeling good?
I was feeling great. I posted for the first time on Facebook. I posted in your Facebook group and I posted on my personal page because we're heading, it was the end of December. We were on vacation. I was feeling good. I was feeling so hopeful. I didn't have to set a New Year's resolution for the first time. To be clear, I was not at my goal, but I had a plan and it was working and I felt so good. So I posted on Facebook. And literally the next day, I found out I was pregnant.
I knew that was what's coming because I was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That was not 6. Okay, pregnant. Congratulations. Surprise.
It was a big surprise. There was some tears. I was very overwhelmed. I worked so hard for 8 months to get where I was. I knew what pregnancies did to my body. I gained a ton of weight during all my other pregnancies. I just worked so hard to get it off. And it was long, right? It's 9 months of pregnancy plus time that you breastfeed that I knew I would have to step away from fasting. So that was really hard for me. And then the pandemic hit. And that made my pregnancy even more fun.
And now you've also got 5 kids at home, 5 kids, and you're pregnant. And suddenly you're probably homeschooling them.
Yep. So my husband was a teacher. So he was teaching from home. My kids were at home. Our dental practice was forced to shut down. So I was home. I couldn't drink. So
no. You're like the only person that I know.
I know. I was like, this was terrible. It was terrible. But she was born September of 2020 and she's great. I love her. She's a hoot and
a blessing. And you can't imagine not having her.
Nope. So, and I gained a lot of weight. I gained everything back. And then I breastfed until June. And during that whole pregnancy and during my whole breastfeeding journey, I obviously didn't fast, but I fasted, right? I mean, I fasted all night. I didn't eat in the mornings until I was like actually hungry.
You listened to your body.
Yes, I did. I had a hearty lunch, a hearty dinner. And then I was like, I'm done. You don't need that bowl of ice cream tonight. Like I didn't need that. So I was more conscious of what I was eating. So that was good, but I still gained a lot of weight. So then breastfeeding. So that was end of June or June 2021. And I got down to like 184 pounds again. It's like my magical spot. So then from June to August, I like jumped back into fasting, back to my 22.2. And I probably lost 10 pounds in those 2 months. And then more life happened. And my business partner decided she wasn't going to be in business with me anymore. So I bought her out. And so very, very quickly, I went from working 2 days a week and 6 kids to working 4 days a week and 6 kids. And it was also the start of a school year. My husband's a teacher, like I said. So he was doing his thing. And I was like, so I still fasted every single day, but that was not my focus. So for the next year and a half, I maintained. And I like to joke that I'm a really good maintainer. Like I'm going to be great when I get to maintenance mode because I can just hang on for a long time.
Well, and you know, stress will do it. People don't realize that stress really does affect our bodies and our ability to, like if all is well and everything's great, your body is letting the pounds go. But if you're under a lot of stress, your body's like, ooh, better hang on to this.
So I just hung on to it for a year and a half. So then January 23, I was like, all right, you got your business under control. The baby's 2.5. She's doing great. The other kids are older. So I was like, time to refocus. So that New Year's, I made like goals that I could control. So I set goals for some alternate day fasting. I set goals for making better food choices. I didn't want to set a weight number goal because I've done that before. It didn't work for me. You get discouraged.
Can I highlight what you said that's so important? You set goals that you could control. That is what I would like everyone to really hear from this right now, because that is all you can do. You can just say, okay, these are the things I can do. And then your body does what it's going to do after that. So if you're like, I must weigh, I don't know, let's say you decided 160 was your goal and you had to get to 160. Your body's still going to do what it's going to do. And if you're like at 162, you're not at your goal, but your body's like, I'm done now. So set goals that you can control. You did some ADF and you tweaked your food choices.
So then in October of 23, I met my what I had put into my like weight loss app as my original goal. I don't feel like I'm at what I should be at. I'm super curvy. Like I've always had like a larger, you know, legs and butt, but I feel really good where I'm at. So I'm just going to keep going and doing what I'm doing. And if that means I maintain here, the number doesn't mean as much as it does to me now than what it used to.
And so you had an idea from the very beginning before baby number 6, right? Before all of that, you were like, this is the number I think I will get to. This would be my goal. And you're there. You're there now. But you're there like, well, maybe I'm not done yet. But you know what? Your body is going to let you know. I totally can relate to that because when I was 210 pounds and trying to decide what's my goal going to be, obviously I had a size goal. I had some old clothes before when I was maintaining and felt really good. I was a size 6 most of the time with an occasional 4. And that was, I just wanted to get back down because I felt so good. And I thought 135 would be that place that I would be. And so I just set that number goal. But when I got to 135, I was a little smaller than I had been the last time that I was like 129. I was even smaller than that. But I knew I still had a little bit to go. But my body decided.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10. If you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know what a fan I am of Dr. Tim Spector and the work he's doing with Zoe. I was first introduced to his work in 2015, and I've been following his research ever since. What I love most about the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is that they have weekly interviews with world-leading experts who explain how their latest research can benefit your health. Recently, I was thrilled to finally meet him face-to-face as we recorded an episode for the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, and this episode aired on April 11th. We had a chance to talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study, and I had the opportunity to explain the clean fast to Jonathan, which may explain why he didn't enjoy his prior experiences with fasting. Search for Zoe Science and Nutrition on your podcast player or on YouTube to hear the latest episode, and don't forget to look for the April 11th episode to hear me, Tim, and Jonathan talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study.
And I still have time. So,
forever. You have forever.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm not as like stressed and concerned about that as I used to be. And that feels really good. I feel like I'm in a really good mental space for it.
So between January and October of 2023, when you just said, okay, I'm going to set the goals I can control. I'm going to do some ADF. I'm going to just let my body do what it does. I'm going to work on my food choices. Talk to us a little bit about what that looked, because, you know, the part of your story prior to January where you were stressed out, you were still fasting, but you were maintaining instead of losing, then you're like, all right, I can make some changes. What exactly did that look like? Because that's what people are going to want to maybe apply to their life.
So I've always really liked that 22-2 like window. So I would still say most of my days are that. But then I tried to do one day a week where I fasted all day. But I really like to eat every day. So I started to do the 500 calorie down day. And I really had to plan ahead to make sure that that 500 calorie meal was like big, because I want to eat a lot. I work really hard at that so that I can eat but stay in that range.
Give us an example of what a big, satisfying 500 calorie down day meal might look like.
Sometimes I do like an egg. Like eggs with lots of veggies in it. I really like salads, so I'll make a big salad with a lot of different things in it. I'm not very creative. I don't have a lot of time for meal planning still.
Well, I think that's great. You don't have to think about it. You have like your go-to 500 calorie down day meals. And, you know, I talk about this a lot, especially in the community, mostly in the community, because people still have in their minds like the full fast version of the down day has to be better, right? Or they'll say something like, I had to use the 500 calorie meal. We're like, no, it's there. Use it. You like to eat every day? Eat it. I also think it probably helps a lot of people sleep. Do you sleep all right after the down days?
I sleep great. I don't like to go to bed full. So sometimes the up days, I still have to cut myself off early. I don't like to eat in the evenings.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you just have to start early so you can have your up day completed in time for you to go to bed. Yeah, sometimes it's really like physically uncomfortable for people to lay down with a lot of food in their stomach and... That makes a lot of sense. All right. So you tweaked your one down day a week, or are you still doing that now?
I am, usually most weeks. So
what day do you like for your down day?
I feel like usually Tuesdays work well for me. We have a shorter lunch on like Tuesdays, so it's easy to skip. But then it's hard to like have an up day on a working day for me too. So sometimes Thursdays, I guess, and then I can... Then I have Fridays to do whatever I want.
That's what I would do. Back when I was doing up days and down days, I haven't done them since 2016, but when I was doing them, I would schedule it. I like to have the up days. I got annoyed with having up days at work, so I liked having them at home.
I do like to eat at work, but so that's when I normally eat is lunch.
Okay, so you're a midday person.
I am, and that is where I've always been, and works so well for me. I eat for my hour, maybe two, and then I don't even think about food the rest of the day. It's so like freeing, and I don't have to, I don't know. I love it.
I wish I was a midday person. I could see that. I am not.
We have like, I have a great team at work, and so it's like family meal every day.
That's fabulous.
I know. So I'm sorry to my kids, but.
I know. It is what it is. But, you know, the people who prefer that midday window really, really love it. And it's just, you just look forward to that. And then you don't feel like tired the rest of the afternoon.
You know, sometimes I might get like a little brief tiredness right after I eat, but it never lasts long. Or I'll just have more coffee. But actually, one reason why I really like the midday is because I can feel when my body switches to fat burning. And I get nauseous, and I hate that feeling so much that I want that to happen while I'm sleeping.
That's so interesting. Well, that's a good reason.
I know. So if my one meal is in the evening, 15 to 16 hours after that is when I feel it change over and I feel gross. And it never lasts long. It's so brief, but it's enough to remind me how much I don't like that feeling.
I don't feel it as nausea, but I can imagine. I've worn a CGM. You've probably heard me say this before. I've worn a CGM, and so I have seen what happens right when I'm having that feeling of like, oh, I'm a little hungry. That's right when my CGM is going down. So your blood sugar must be just going down, doing a little dip, got a little ooh, queasy, and then it flips the switch, and now you're fine. But you got that little bloop right there. I'm glad I don't feel it as nausea, but it goes away if you do keep going.
Yes, it's very, very quick.
So what do you do about dinner at family dinner time? Do you cook for your family? What happens then?
Well, if you can imagine, mealtimes at my house are crazy.
I'm imagining it. It's true. You're probably like glad you don't have to eat.
I know. So, I mean, and now we are in such a busy phase. So I have two in high school and two in middle school. So, you know, they're in sports and activities. So we do not come together as much as I would like for family mealtimes, but we do cook most nights at home for them. And then I can just focus on them. When I am trying to eat at the same time they're eating, I just get annoyed because I want to enjoy my meal. So they need a fork or a refill on their milk or whatever. I can just do that. And I'm not stressed or frustrated that I'm not eating. So I think it's a better balance.
Yeah, you have the family time with them, but it's okay to not. The reason I wanted to really talk about that is because that is something people sometimes struggle with. That prefer a midday window, but they have a family. So they're like, how do I balance the fact that I prefer to eat in the middle of the day? And then we have family dinner time and I'm not eating with them. And so they think it's going to be a big deal, but it's not a big deal.
So my kids, whoever's setting the table, say, Mom, are you eating? Dad, are you eating? And then they either set us a plate or don't set us a plate. And it's fine. Nobody's ever really asked more than that. Actually, my seven-year-old just asked the other day. I picked her up from school and I was listening to a podcast in the car. And then she goes, Mom, why do the kids always ask if you're eating dinner? So I don't even think she knew that I like fasted. So she's just figuring that out now.
So it's no big deal. Kids really notice less about what we're doing. They're like picking it up. But you could be sitting there not eating and they're not worried about you not eating. I love it. But I wanted to make sure to talk about that, like I said, because it's really not a barrier unless you let it be a barrier. You know, if you're like sitting there racked with guilt because you're not eating with your kids, I think they're going to pick up on that more so than if you're just easy breezy getting them another fork. So do the ones in high school and middle school know that you're fasting?
Yes. I mean, it's not a big deal. It doesn't bother them or anything. And now I've learned so much about it too. Like, and I let them guide their meal times. My son, he eats a lot all day, starts right away in the morning. My daughter does not like to eat in the mornings, and I don't push that. So
I think that's the way we should be feeding all of our kids. Wake up hungry, eat, not hungry, eat when you are, instead of forcing them. I think that's the way we're meant to be. So it's interesting that your son, is he older? Is the son older?
Yeah, he's 16. You know, he works out and does more sports. And so.
Growing. I remember having those growing teenage boys. They really never stop eating.
Never. I have three right now. It's, ugh.
Three teenage boys?
I mean, my youngest son is 11.
Okay, so I bet you've got good smell in house right now.
Oh my gosh, he plays hockey too. It's brutal. It's so brutal.
It really is. There's no smell like teenage boy smell starting around about 10, 11, 12. It's like worse than puppies, but then they start to smell like grown-ups eventually. Thank goodness. Now, you mentioned that also when you were, you know, January to October, when you were working on getting off of that plateau, you worked on your food choices. Tell us a little bit about that.
So one thing that I noticed first is that I cannot open my window with sugar. I have to make better choices for my first bites. And I love sugar. I feel like when I first did those 8 months of fasting before I got my big surprise pregnancy, I had started to like, my body had really started to cut back on all those cravings. That hasn't been as obvious in recent months for me. So I definitely still crave the sugar. So I just have to be really conscious of that. Trying to work in more veggies first. That glucose
goddess. Yeah, the glucose revolution.
That book is like on my stack to read. So just trying to, you know, do some of that. Less processed food. You know, just more whole foods.
That's the key. You know, I just had my own little diet brain where I was like really restricting what I was eating again, just because, again, I went through Zoe and then I was running a CGM and then my dad was sick and I'm like, I'm just going to be whole food, plant-based. I'll eat it. But now I'm like, no, I don't want to just restrict. It doesn't feel good. We want to eat the foods that we want to eat.
And that feels nice to not restrict. But also I have to make sure that I'm still choosing good choices.
That's really the key. Our bodies let us know. Like, you are not opening with sugar. And it's not even because the glucose goddess, the glucose revolution book told you not to. It's because your body doesn't like it. And when you start applying some of the things that you've learned, like when I apply what I learned from Zoe, but without stressing about it. And when I apply what we know about, you know, keeping our blood sugar steady and opening with something that's not going to spike our blood sugar, I feel better. But without like having to write it down or stress about it, or if I'm going to eat a cracker, it's okay.
Yep.
Exactly. So you found that balance. So how much weight did you lose from January to October?
Right around 30 pounds.
So you're feeling good right now, knowing there's still maybe more to go, but your body's going to do what it does.
I mean, if this is where I am, like, I'm okay with that. I would like, and I'm just going to let it happen now. And now also my mindset is more onto like autophagy and the benefits I'm going to get from that. I feel like in my life right now, in my social circle, there's been a lot of cancer. So I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to keep fasting. And hopefully that helps with that. I don't know. I would love to see a study done on that, on intermittent fasters, and if cancer rates are any different in that population.
That would be a great study. I wonder if Tim Spector, with his study, they just did a big intermittent fasting study in the UK with their Zoe app, where they had some people doing some fasting and monitored them. I wonder if they could do something like that. That would be interesting. It would really need to be a long-term kind of a thing.
Right. But even like, because, you know, you hear like breast cancer rates are 1 in 4 or whatever they are right now. You know, if you just polled intermittent fasters, would we see that same 1 in 4? Is it less? I don't know.
I would love to say that. Someone needs to do it. And that's the kind of data they could collect. I'm trying to think how. how they'd be able to collect, like knowing who was doing intermittent fasting. But that seems like really worth doing. It just needs to be a long-term kind of a thing. But, you know, in our communities, we do see, you know, the people that are there. And every now and then someone does have cancer in the community. But the difference is we don't know. Would they have had it? Would more people have had it without the fasting? So but I know, just like you, the more we can do that is healthy, that gives us the best chance long term.
So yeah, I mean, again, I came for the weight loss, but I've seen so many other benefits along the way. So the weight loss is total bonus at this point for me.
I love that. I am listening to Fiber Fueled.
Oh yeah, it's in my stack too.
Is it in your stack? I've got the hardback copy, and I read it maybe in 2020. I read it. I can't remember. I read it a long time ago. It was pretty new when I got a hold of it. And now I'm listening to it on Audible. Do you ever listen to audiobooks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would really highly, you will love it. I would listen to this one. I'm getting so much more out of it as a listener than I did as a reader. But it made me think about what you said, because he was talking about the gut connection to cancer. And he actually, there was a section in one of the first few chapters I just listened to today where he was talking about how high levels of insulin and cancer and all of that fit together. And of course, you know, we know that, but keeping our insulin down is, I think, one of our best defenses. So as a dentist, all that really spoke to you. And also we hear all the time from intermittent fasters that their teeth are better.
Yes. And I mean, I don't tell my patients to fast, but I mean, kind of in a roundabout way, right? Like and now dentistry too is looking so much at like microbiome in your mouth and all of those kinds of things. So fascinating. But the, you know, the less you eat, the less times you eat, the less you're changing your pH and your, you know, the microbiome in your mouth. And so, no, I don't say you should fast, but I also say, if you're going to drink that can of pop, chug it, don't sip it.
That's a great tip there. I want to talk about the mouth microbiome a little bit. You know, that's a great topic. And can I tell you a story about a crown that I've got?
Oh, yeah.
I have a crown that I got a few years ago. And okay, everybody, this might be gross. I'm sorry. It had like a weird odor around the crown. Like it just smelled yucky. And as I went back to my dentist, and I was like, you know, if I touch this area of my, it's like has a weird, like coming out of that crown, there's something in there that smells really gross. And she's like, well, you just need to use mouthwash. You need to use like Listerine. You need to water pick it, get all the bacteria out of there. So I was like, well, okay. So I did all that and it didn't fix it. It just kept going and going and going. Then I was sponsored by this toothpaste that they don't sponsor the podcast anymore, but they're like, you know, we're great for your mouth microbiome. We do not kill the good guys. And I'm like, I never thought of that before. Cause you know, using the Listerine and all those harsh mouthwashes to kill all the germs in our mouth, because that's what we thought we should do. But I wasn't even thinking about my gross crown. So I just started brushing with this toothpaste because they sent me some and I was like, this is great. I like, you know, making my mouth microbiome better. It made the bad smell go away. So does that surprise you as a dentist? Not at all.
No, I mean, you could have had an imbalance of something in there. So, and we actually have we recommend a product to a patient a lot. It's a probiotic for your mouth.
This was a probiotic toothpaste.
Yeah. So now they're little tablets that you like suck on and dissolve in your mouth. And we give them a lot to like periodontal patients.
Well, anyway, I was super surprised. I wasn't expecting, this toothpaste to make my weird smelling tooth feel better. But I was like, I have ruined my life. I have a bad smelling tooth forever. And I would need to mouthwash it. But
do you still use that toothpaste?
Well, I've switched to a different one that I like. Bad smell's not back. But something was out of balance. Yeah, no more bad smell. But anyway, I just wasn't expecting that. But the mouth microbiome is fascinating because you probably know, you were probably taught to kill all the germs in the mouth.
Sort of. Yeah. And like different bacteria are in everybody's mouth. And again, it's so fascinating how you get those bacteria, right? You get them from your main caregiver when you're an infant. So if your parents have bad teeth because of bad bacteria, then you're going to get those same bad bacteria. So it's all very fascinating.
It is so fascinating. And it's, you know, listening to Fiber Fueled right now, of course, he's talking about the gut microbiome. And he said that a theory of like people would kiss, like why people started kissing was to sample each other's microbiome. Like, that's so interesting. But who knows? I never thought about that you got your mouth microbiome from your parents as well. So fascinating. So you do talk about fasting a little bit, but do you talk about it to people that you know, not your patients?
I do talk about it to people I know. The first, when I first started, I shared it with everybody. And then I put it out there on Facebook, and then I got pregnant. So I've kind of stepped back since then. But everybody, like all my close friends and family, know that I fast. A lot of my family fasts or have tried fasting.
Anybody stick with it?
Yeah. My one sister-in-law, she does it, and she didn't really need to lose, like she didn't need to lose weight, but was having some, you know, just weight gain a little bit and other health symptoms. So she fasts and she just feels amazing. My sister actually just started. Like she's maybe
so did
on,
mine.
So she's maybe on month two and I'm so excited. Yay. She's like, so when do these benefits start? I was like, maybe 3 or 4. Just keep going.
Yeah, don't stop. Just don't stop. But yeah, my sister has been watching, of course, and she was working. She was working outside the home and it was just really hard but she just retired. And her husband, my brother-in-law, has been fasting for a while and one of our other brothers does it. And so she's finally has time to focus on it. So she's doing it too. And I'm so excited. I was there at her house this weekend and we were just fasting. Then we opened our window. It was great. So I'm glad that your sister's doing it too. Yeah, tell her to keep going. Don't stop.
Yeah, her husband fasts, so I think that's a good source for her too.
It really, really helps when other people are doing it. Like if Chad got up every single morning and made himself like a bacon egg breakfast, I would toast or, you know, all that smells. I would think I would be, I don't know, maybe I'd be fine, but I'm glad he doesn't. So does your husband do it at all?
He does. So he introduced me to fasting technically first. He is a chemistry teacher and he was teaching a biochem class and one of their units was like different diets. And so he's like, hey, check out this intermittent fasting. And he was like, went through all the science of it. And I was like, you know, just totally like blew him up. So then when I came to him and I was like, hey, I'm going to try this intermittent fasting. He's like, Gina, I told you about that already. And I think he has been an intermittent faster his whole life, honestly. Like we went to college together and I would like go over there in the evenings and he'd be like, yeah, I haven't eaten yet today. And I'm thinking, how did you forget to eat? Like who does that? So I think that was just him naturally. So he does fast now. He has had some major stress in his life this past year. So his weight gain has been a little bit, but he's back in there and it's good.
What is his window?
So he's home right now. He's not working this year. So he also does usually a lunch midday. He used to wait until after school to eat.
Yeah, that worked really, really well for me as a teacher as well, because at school, you got to be sharp, but there's a lot going on. It was so nice not to have to fool with a meal.
So, but now that he's at home, like, it's hard to wait until dinner.
It was so much easier at school. And then when I got home after I retired, I suddenly had to, like, refigure it out. You know, I had summers at home, obviously, before, but suddenly I'm there all the time. So I get his struggle. And it makes sense that his window shifted a little earlier. On the weekends, do y'all have, like, a nice big lunch together?
We usually cook one big meal, whether it's lunch or dinner. We kind of depends on what's happening that weekend.
So you mentioned that before, back in the day, when you were trying to lose the weight, you were heavy in the gym, running your half marathon, doing the kickboxing. How about now? Do you do anything for exercise?
I mean, not super consistently. I want to. I do like to cycle, so I have a Peloton, and I do some yoga for dentistry. I need to do more yoga. We walk a lot and we like to hike, but maybe 3 times a week I'll work out. Nothing intense like a half marathon or extreme kickboxing. My body didn't like that either. So now I just do light exercise.
Yeah, I don't know how much there is to this, but you know, apparently the DNA report that tells you about your exercise, mine was like, yeah, not doing the excessive exercise. Your DNA says no. I'm like, awesome.
Was that the Xcode Life? Because I did that. And mine also said not likely to lose weight from exercise. So I was like, all right, I'm out.
Yep, not likely to lose weight from exercise and also not likely to do a lot of heavy exercise or something. So for anybody who's wondering about this, years ago, probably 2017, I did 23andMe and downloaded the raw data and ran it through a couple platforms. One of them was Xcode Life. I don't know if they still even operate. I don't even know, but that's what gave me those reports about that. But yeah, I was like, I knew it. But some people may get the DNA profile that says needs to exercise a lot to lose weight. But I think we all know, like you already knew.
And I think my husband does well with exercise. So
if he had his DNA done, I bet it would confirm it. I was so disappointed when I wrote Feast Without Fear in 2017. That was when everyone was really hopeful about the genetics component of weight loss. Like you're genetically this or you're genetically that. And even Tim Spector back in the day was doing the twin stuff. And then with all the genetics and how much of it was genetic, but he found the identical twins had very different outcomes when it came to like their weight and so much of it came down to the gut instead of the genetics. But there's a scientist at Stanford who's doing some research into what diet might be best for you. Are you better low fat? Are you better low carb? And turns out they looked at a couple of different SNPs or a couple of different genetic, no correlation at all in a big randomized trial. So that just hasn't panned out. But the gut, that's really telling us a lot about our bio-individuality. We know we're different. But it's not just as simple as download your Xcode Life report and now you got everything. I wish it was. But interesting about the exercise. So it's good to stay active and stay busy. So is there anything that you struggle with?
I mean, I like to eat. So I used to really focus on how many hours I fasted. Now I've been listening to some of the podcasts and you've been talking a lot lately about focus on like your window time. So I've been trying to do that more. Because I'll like be like, okay, I can't eat until 2 o'clock. And then I like feel guilty if I need to open at like 11. So I do still struggle with that, the timing and just sometimes managing like events. Like we have a dinner planned, but I'm so used to eating lunch and I'll be like, oh, so then I'll maybe eat twice that day. And I didn't need to eat twice that day. So that's still hard.
You know, I do the same thing, except, you know, my window is different. If we have an event that's midday, I'll just eat twice that day, midday plus later. So it makes a lot of sense. We have to flex for our social events. But I wanted to go back to what you said about focusing on the window length being a little easier, because I know exactly what you mean. I've seen a lot of people in the communities over the years that struggle with that, like feeling like if they don't get to X hour, whether it's 16 or 18 or 19 or whatever, if they don't get to that hour of fasting, they feel like they failed. But if you just forget that pressure and just say, all right, whenever I open, and I'm going to keep my window open for a certain number of hours, then I'm going to close it. The fasting takes care of itself over time.
And I felt when I timed out my fast, I had to be like really strategic, like, okay, I have to close by this time. And there was so much more calculating. And I mean, I liked to do that. And at first it worked for me because I was trying to get longer fasts. So that was easy to be like, okay, I'm going to do 16 and then 17 and then 20, whatever. But now that I am more into my routine, I know I'm going to be in the range of 20. Some days it'll be 20. Some days it's 24. And it doesn't really matter, right?
It evens out.
Yeah, it evens out.
I think that's a really good point, because sometimes people can really feel like they are failing if they're not reaching that certain hour number, and then just no, and having to calculate it overnight. See, I never calculated my fast. I don't know, but I can't imagine being like, okay, what time did I stop eating last night? I don't know. I never know. I'm not sure. And then having to like, well, how many hours from that is 19? Oh, I can't eat till 3. I mean, no. If I want to eat at 1:30 today because I'm starving, I'm going to eat at 1.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian Software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
I'm 30. Yeah, that's exactly right. And then just let it happen. So what you've learned over the years as an intermittent faster and delving into your own health journey, has that changed the types of food that you have available at your house for your kids?
Yes. I mean, we're really working on that right now. That's like a huge goal, is to really get rid of processed foods. Again, it's hard when we're busy and they have my love of sugar and they just want to grab a quick snack and run out the door. So, but we are working on that. And I have one of my sons has a lot of like anxiety and stuff right now. And we did cut out like red dye 40 and stuff for a little while. And I feel like it made a big difference. So we really need to focus on that again.
Yeah, that one is huge. It made such a difference. Like it changed everything for, like, I know Will would have been on all sorts of medications for behavior, ADD, all of that, because he just responded to those chemicals like I know he would have been, but we controlled it through diet.
That's like been this kind of month here. We're really focusing on making some better meals. We're doing a lot more plant-based meals at our house, getting rid of some processed foods. My three-year-old, actually, she is my best eater. And I don't know. It's been so amazing to have a child who will try everything. And she likes a lot of things. And I wish all my kids ate like that.
You think it's because maybe you're just more relaxed? Or did you start her on that kind of stuff earlier, maybe?
I think I did. I think, you know, just introducing first foods, we were smarter and better about it. You know, less puffs and yogurt melts and more avocados. I don't know.
Right. I think that's it. Cause what was that book? French Kids Eat Everything or something. That was a book. I haven't read all of it. I read some of it, or I can't remember, it was a long time ago, but I was like, I love the title of this book, French Kids Eat Everything. It was a woman, maybe she was an American and she married a French man, something like that. And then over in France, the kids were just literally eating everything. She's like, but her kids were picky because they grew up in America. And like her French in-laws were like, you just give the kid the food. They eat the food. And so a lot of the pickiness is, it's cultural. It's I look back on how I fed my boys. It was me. It was me. I was the problem.
The older kids are, it's getting better there too. They're willing to try way more. And even if they don't love it, they'll still eat it. And that makes mealtimes better. Might not be their favorite food, but they ate it. And there was nutritional value to it. So
yeah, well, thank goodness. I'm amazed both my boys eat well now. But I don't know how that happened, because I literally, like, there was a whole period of time when Cal only ate things that were beige. And I laughed about it. Ha, 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 that's so funny. Here's some beige food. What? I don't know. I didn't know what I was doing.
My first grader is the pickiest of all my kids. So that, and that's a struggle, because it's really hard to find anything that she'll eat. But saying that too, she doesn't even eat like cookies or cake or anything.
She doesn't want any of that.
Nope.
What does she like?
Mac and cheese.
Universal.
She literally doesn't even eat bread. So I can't even like make her a peanut butter toast or anything.
Wow.
I know. So it's hard. She's my pickiest, but she likes broccoli though, of all things.
Well, give her some broccoli. Broccoli and mac and cheese. It could be worse. That's really funny. So tell us about some of your non-scale victories.
So right off the bat, my plantar fasciitis was gone. I mean, I had it so bad, like I couldn't step out of bed in the mornings. So that, and that was, I mean, within 2 months maybe of fasting.
So it wasn't just because you had lost a ton of weight. It was like less inflammation.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So I've maybe had like 2 times since that I've noticed it at all. And it probably related to, you know, sugar or something that I ate. I've had a lot of scars disappear. So I had a big old burn on my hand here. It's gone. I had a mole removed and they had to go in further and take out more of it. And it made like a big keloid scar and it's like almost gone. It's like it's totally flat.
I mean, autophagy for the win. I mean, there's nothing else it could be other than your autophagy.
Right. That's why I just keep going I just keep fasting for autophagy because those are only things I can see. I can't even imagine what's going on inside. So, oh, I have hypothyroidism. So my meds have decreased twice since I started fasting and I was on a pretty much every year my dose was increasing. So they have decreased twice. I'm due for a check here soon. So it'll be interesting to see if they decrease again or stay the same.
That will be interesting. We hear that all the time. There's some kind of a weird misconception. I don't know who started it or who's propagating this, but that if you have hypothyroidism or any kind of thyroid issues, you can't fast.
Well, I've been fasting for 4.5 years. So.
I know you've probably never heard that one, but I think, I don't know, but I feel like if we're looking for a reason not to fast, we can find one. Well, I'm not sure I can. You know, I heard it was bad. I heard it was bad for whatever, you know. But we hear from people all the time, just like you, who are hypothyroid or maybe they have Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune thyroid issue, and they get so much better. So anybody who's listening, if you're somebody who's heard, well, can't do fasting if you're hypothyroid, it's bad for you. That is not only not true, but you have improved measurably.
I mean, just like inches. Like, so I measured at the beginning, which I'm so glad that I did. So I've lost 9 inches off my hips, 7 inches off my waist, and 6 inches off of one thigh.
Oh, my Lord.
I know.
That is a lot of thigh to go down. But 7 inches around your waist, that is amazing. So your whole shape, you're like hourglass.
Yes. And it's so interesting. So you've been talking a lot about like the waist to hip ratio. So even at my very heaviest, my waist to hip ratio was 0.73.
Okay. So you've always had a curvy, healthy. You didn't have that big abdominal obesity.
Mm-mm. I've always carried it in my thighs. And I feel like it's hard to lose from there. But I mean, obviously I did. I would have never thought I lost 9 inches off my hips.
I mean, that is a lot. Did you save your clothes?
I didn't, but I have a pair of jeans in the same brand that I had at my heaviest. So those were like a 16 and now I'm in a 10. So, I mean, that's huge.
That is huge. I wish I had saved some of my biggest clothes. I was just so ready to get them out of there. I got them out of there, but I wish I had them. That would be hard to believe. They were tight. My 16 W's were super tight. And it feels so good to be in a smaller size. So any other positive health changes or non-scale victories? Or is that it? That's a pretty good list.
That is. I mean, my only other like non-scale victories is now like I get to wear clothes that I want. I felt like before I just had to get clothes that fit me because they fit. And it was hard to find clothes that fit. And now it's been really fun to buy some things that I want to buy. So
it's a whole different experience shopping, isn't it? And you still might find things that don't fit, but you don't blame yourself. You blame, well, this is a weird shirt. It's not you. It's the shirt's weird. Well, we are almost out of time. What would you tell someone just starting out with intermittent fasting, or what do you wish you knew when you first started?
I'm going to say don't quit. I mean, it's been 4.5 years and I've had a baby, I've had life, and I just kept showing up for myself.
And when you needed to tweak, you tweaked. When you were maintaining and you were like, well, I'm fasting, but I'm not losing. You were like, I got to make some changes. So you didn't start like alternate daily fasting where it's like up, down, up, down, up, down forever. You just added a down day here and there, followed by an up day.
And I just did what I felt like I could do at the time. Even though my life was still crazy and chaotic, I just made a little change and stuck with it.
Yeah. Don't quit is the best advice. You'll never quit. This is your lifestyle. That's how I feel too. This is how we're going to live. We're going to be the little old ladies in the in the assisted living. Just because I'll probably just live there because it sounds fun.
I know. Social time all the time.
That's right. Social time all the time. I think I will really like it. Anyway, but I'll be like, okay, I'm only going to eat dinner tonight. Maybe there'll be lots of us intermittent fasting because we'll be old. We'll live a long time. Well, Gina, it has been great to talk to you today, and thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
Do you have an intermittent fasting story to tell? Email me at jen@intermittentfastingstories.com, and I'll add you to the lineup. That's GIN@intermittentfastingstories.com. The world wants to hear your story. That's it for today. Remember, I may have a doctorate, but I'm not a medical doctor. So don't use anything you hear on this podcast as a substitute for medical advice. Please always check with your doctor or healthcare provider if you have medical questions. I'll talk to you next week, Fasting Family, where we will hear another inspiring story. Have a great week and fast on. Intermittent Fasting Stories is edited, mixed, and mastered by Resonate Recordings. To learn more, visit them at resonaterecordings.com or email them at hello@resonaterecordings.com. Intermittent Fasting Stories listeners will receive a free offer if you mention that you heard it on the podcast.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.